The Guardian.
Hello all, James Richardson here, and before we get started with today's edition of Football Weekly, I'm going to point you in the direction of our sponsor Squarespace. For more about building beautiful websites, go to squarespace.com. And now, on with the show. All together now, Euros on fire. Your interest is justified. Yes, it's our first Euro 2016 Football Daily. Part one, the beginning. With just days to go till it all kicks off, we're here to explain this big, complicated tournament in simple, easy-to-understand words, listeners, breaking down the teams from A for Austria to Z for the French. Plus, we've got old producer Ben's almanacky of ye fun facts. Where in Europe is it illegal to visit the cinema on Sunday? And which country has more chickens than people? The answers may surprise you, and they're coming up in our special Euro 2016 Football Daily Show. All right, show one begins with controversy, listeners. As it turns out that pretty much every country in Europe has more chickens than people. That's Philippe Auclair over there. Rafa Honigstein, another one to pick us up on that. You know. There you go. That's quite worrying. So if the chickens ever got together, we'd be in trouble. Yeah,
they're a very docile bird.
They are, yeah.
Well,
that's Barry Glendinning.
Most of them in cages in factories, aren't they? So they're fine. Yeah, we're quite safe from them.
It's a but that's exactly population. The kind of conditions that incubate a revolution.
Incubate, very, very good.
Oh, right, yeah, because chickens.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Right. Anyway, Jonathan Wilson, good morning. Hello.
Hi.
All right, Philippe Auclair.
Yes.
Barry Glendinning.
Hello.
And Raphael Honigstein. I don't think we've ever had quite such a high-powered selection of footballing brains.
And me.
And Barry Glendinning. And thank goodness, because the Euros have never been bigger. You know, in quantity, yes. Potentially in quality, so much to look forward to. What?
For quantity, yes. Quality, absolutely not.
Really not?
Nah.
Well, it hasn't even started yet, and already you're poo-pooing it.
It's kicked off in here, though, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has.
Well, there's eight rubbish teams there to start with, at least eight rubbish teams.
Right.
And I don't think the best sides in Europe are anywhere near as good as previous best sides in Europe.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. Who are you looking forward to seeing, Jonathan?
I was really looking forward to seeing Russia till their entire midfield collapsed in the last fortnight.
Oh. Oh, well, we'll hear more about that later on. Is there anyone that you think genuinely is going to be a breath of fresh footballing air?
I don't have to be fresh, but France should be very, very good. They're potentially excellent. But
that's brilliant. France are page one of my special Euro preview notes. They're in Group A, Philippe.
Yes,
you're
they
from
are.
France. Do you know who else is in the group? No looking.
Oh, well, Switzerland,
yes.
Romania and Albania.
Right. Is it going to be quite a dur group? Because Albania and Romania...
Dur?
Yeah.
Well, if the French... I don't think as far as the French are concerned, they're scoring goals for fun at the moment.
They're in for fun as well, aren't they?
Yep.
Two a game this year.
Mm-hmm. Just beaten Scotland very well.
There you go.
Olivier Giroud is on fire and even got a standing ovation when he left the pitch.
Oh, did he?
Yep, absolutely.
Because previously...
Je suis Giroud.
Right, yeah, previously he'd not been enjoying the fan support.
Well, he's not enjoyed the support of Benzema's fans, but I think...
Is that what it is?
It is, that, okay. I'm afraid.
Well, listen...
Are they racist, though?
Yeah. Well, it was a good question.
No, it's a very good friend.
Yes,
everyone likes France. They give us such special moments as the whole sex tape blackmail issue.
Mm-hmm. Nice now the bus.
Exactly. Ribery driving a coach.
Materazzi and Zidane.
Yeah. What will the French come up with this time, do you think?
I think you're going to be disappointed. It seems to be a fairly well-behaved team.
Oh.
Quite young. No, there are no... I think characters in there who maybe Pogba. I don't know. Not even that.
No, Pogba's a lovely chap.
No, he's a lovely chap, actually. Most of them are actually lovely chaps.
Hmm.
So the only one who was a bad boy was Griezmann.
Right. What did he do?
Well, you remember the famous trip they made before this game against Norway.
Was he involved in that?
Yes.
Ooh.
With Yann Mvila. And they drove from Paris to Le Havre. Right. And they went to a nightclub and they came back and they were beaten 5-3 or something like that.
Was that the direction they drove in? They drove from Paris, the capital,
to Le Havre,
to a nightclub.
Absolutely, because nobody, well, I wouldn't say nobody knew them, but it probably was a bit more discreet to go to Normandy than to stay in Paris.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not discreet enough.
Yeah, no, obviously. Obviously not. But no, I don't think that there's anything in that team that makes me think it's going to be anything like the fun we had in 2010.
Really?
No. Okay. But they're a good side. They're a very good side. Except perhaps the defending might be quite funny to look at. Yeah.
That's not really the impression I get, though. That I can't help but feel, are you slightly downplaying the whole Benzema racism accusations, Eric Cantona sticking his oar in?
Yeah, and Eric Cantona has been ridiculed in the whole country, and he only represents himself. And everybody knows that he has a problem with Didier Deschamps, and that's the reason why he put the boot in. Benzema didn't help himself by saying that there were racial reasons for the fact that he actually was colluding in a blackmail.
Right.
Allegedly.
Yeah, and money laundering on the side.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Tell us the extraordinary story of André-Pierre Gignac.
Gignac.
How surprised are you to see him?
I'm very happy, and I can do a little bit of publicity for the next Blizzard, I think.
Because
I did a little bit on Gignac for The Guardian, but I did a big bit for the Blizzard.
Right.
It's an extraordinary story because everybody genuinely thought that that was it when he decided to leave Marseille. He'd had a great season. He had offers from a number of clubs, and he decided to go to Mexico. And his career has actually taken a turn for the better in Mexico. He's won his first league title. He's been voted Player of the Year. He's the Golden Boot in Liga MX. Liga MX is certainly not worse than Liga. And suddenly he's back in the French team, scored a few goals, and I think he's a very good foil. I mean, I don't think he's going to start. I mean, it's going to be Giroud, obviously, who is going to be... actually, the only certainty in the front three is Giroud. It's amazing, isn't it?
Hmm.
Yeah. The other two places in the 4-3-3 are actually up for grabs. We're not absolutely sure who he's going to start with.
All right. With the abundance of talent, perhaps everywhere but at the back, how would you say this team compares to great French sides of the past? Like
it's very different. It's very different because if you look at the 1998-2000, that was based on a very, very strong defence with players like Marcel Desailly and Laurent Blanc, Thuram, Lizarazu and so forth, Manu Petit, Didier Deschamps. You know, you look at that, was the spine, the defensive spine was extremely strong.
Right.
With also, Givarche doing a lot of work up front as a first defender, which was basically in the logic of the team we'd seen in 1996, whom everybody thought is far too negative. But we saw what Jacquet was leading to. And with Lemaire, it was a bit of the same. This is very different. It's unbalanced. It's very good going forward. It's got loads of game changers. Kingsley Coman is, I think, really genuinely a revelation. And then you've got Anthony Martial, and you've got Antoine Griezmann, and you've got Dimitri Payet. I mean, that's pretty damn good.
It's crazy.
It's crazy. And the midfield is not too bad, despite the injuries. Because it might surprise people, but genuinely, loads of people in France thought it was a terrible catastrophe that Lassana Diarra was injured. But N'Golo Kanté is now playing in that role, the one in front of the back four, and he was superb again against Scotland. So from that side, from that bit on, that's fine. But behind N'Golo Kanté... So in this respect, it's not a French team like the ones you've been used to.
Okay, the last two French teams to host the tournament have, I think, won both.
Correct.
Yeah. So how much pressure is this side under?
I don't think that there is a huge amount of pressure as such. I mean, I don't feel it like that. I think there's a rather optimistic feel around the team.
Right.
Perhaps because... Precisely, it is fresh. There are young faces in there, and it's a team that loves going forward, scores spectacular goals, and so forth. I wouldn't say the feel-good factor is back. There's still a lot to be done, to reclaim the ground that's been lost, from the 2002 World Cup onwards, basically. But no, I don't feel there is. To be honest, we've got more pressing matters in France at the moment. We'll come to the football in due course. At the moment, the country's underwater and basically on general strike. So I think people's minds are perhaps more on that than the Euro.
Right.
Okay. Until, of course, the first game.
Change.
Well, is this general strike likely to affect the tournament?
Well, it's not the general strike, per se. Isn't
there sort of like Mad Max style battles to get petrol and stuff?
Yeah, things like that. There's quite unbelievable stuff happening. And also, when it's not just strikes, I think over the weekend, some guys to demonstrate set an electricity generator on fire, depriving 120,000 homes of electricity.
So it's not just Will Griggs that's on fire in this summer's tournament, quite literally electricity.
No, so it's pretty,
generators.
You know, it's lively, I should say.
And what's the reason for it?
It's a law that's been put forward by the government called La Loi Travail. It's a labour law.
Right.
And they don't like it.
If it was a general strike, would France's players have to come out or be scabs?
No, usually they go on strike.
Yeah.
That's the way it works. Not this time.
No.
Okay. Not this time.
All right. Okay.
No, believe me, once the tournament starts, we'll be absolutely fine.
Oh, super. That's great news. You're obviously optimistic.
I'm not as optimistic as some of my compatriots. I'm not as optimistic for the French national team. No, I sincerely think that, I mean, our defence, when I saw that Adil Rami was back in the side, I thought, no, please no. Mm. But, you know, no Varane, no Zuma, no Sacco.
Yeah.
That's bad.
So it's got Koscielny and Mangala at the back, is it?
No, Koscielny and Rami.
Oh, and Rami ahead of... Really?
Yeah, Adil Rami, yeah.
Okay, right.
Who looks hopelessly out of shape and out of form and was at fault against Cameroon when Cameroon scored, also offered the Scots their best chance to score. So he's not very sharp. And the only thing you could say is that their group is so easy.
Yeah.
Is it genuinely easy?
We'll talk about that group in just a second, because I just want to ask... I mentioned old producer Ben's old book, Almanac Key, of fun facts. What I've done, I've added in one or two that actually aren't true. See if you can spot which is
I've
which.
I've got one for you.
Oh, go on then, Philippe.
Which is Europe's biggest banana producer?
So this is a UEFA member.
But this is one of those.
It just said the Euro.
But this is one of those questions where it's about
it's Ireland,
former territories and stuff.
Come on!
No, you're one letter off.
Iceland.
Yes.
Shit.
What?
Yes, geothermy, volcano, heat.
Why on earth would you think Ireland is a big producer of bananas?
I've seen palm trees in the southwest.
Absolutely, Glengariff, man.
Right. Okay, listeners. I've got nothing to match that.
Mm-hmm. Hot houses.
Okay, let's hear some more fun facts about France. Rafa, the French army was the first to use camouflage in 1915. True or false?
False.
It's true. It's against the law to carry live snails on a high-speed train in France without them having their own tickets, Barry. What do you say?
False.
It's true. On average, Jonathan, a new cooking book is published every day in France.
I think it's more frequent. I'm saying false.
Jesus, you're good. It's two a day. It's two a day in France. French toast is French, Philippe?
What?
French toast is French.
No, it's biscotte in French.
False. It was invented by a man called Joseph French in New York. That's amazing. I'll just do one more. Rafa... Was a law passed in 1987 forbidding couples from kissing on train platforms to avoid delaying trains?
I'd say yes.
Play at home, listeners.
Okay.
No. It was actually passed in 1910.
Oh, that's a trick question.
Oh, yeah.
Come on.
That's how we roll. All right. Well, yeah, France. I think we all know about France. Yeah. But what about these other curious nations? Switzerland, is it? They're in there. Albania and Romania.
Yeah. Albania beat France last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
But it was a completely different France. It was a kind of experimental side, not the same tactical system,
It was a friendly last June. They've also beaten Portugal. Yeah. Oh, in Portugal. They beat Qatar. So I think that's when everyone sat up and took notice.
Mm-hmm. Their manager has got grief for... leaving out for reasons I can't discover or wasn't able to find out. Their main striker, Hamdi Salehi, who was top scorer in the Albanian league with 28 goals, which seems weird. And
was it a sex tape, probably, or racism?
I'm not sure, but there was a bit of a public outcry. And the manager, it's an Italian fella, Gianni Di Biasi.
Oh, yeah, Di Biasi, yeah.
He explained, I have sent a letter to the players explaining they are selected to be part of a team based on their physical and psychological conditions and capacities to cope with such an activity.
All right, so maybe...
So he obviously didn't fit the bill.
All right, well, Albania, who knows about Albania? Because those results look impressive, but they only scored, was it 7 goals in qualifying? And 3 of those were awarded to them. So effectively, they only scored 4 goals in qualifying. That suggests there's a problem with this fella being left out.
Yeah, it seems weird.
He wasn't really doing the business. So mm-hmm. It also suggests he wasn't really doing the business.
I guess not. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's a better reading.
Well, I don't claim to know much about Albania. They do have a Sunderland old boy as their captain.
They've also got... There's this weird thing with Switzerland where half the Swiss team were actually born in Albania and half the Albanian team were born in Switzerland.
Well, Granit Xhaka, who's just signed for Arsenal, his brother plays for Albania. Mm. So there'll be a Xhaka derby on the 11th of June in Lens.
True.
First game, isn't it? Well, but yeah, it's their first game, the second game in the group.
All right. Well, Jonathan, what about Albania?
Yeah, I mean... They're one of those countries who, if they get on a roll, they could get through. But equally, I think they're probably, in terms of the quality of the players, probably the worst side there. Maybe
really in the
well, certainly in the bottom 4 or 5. Yeah,
are they in the bottom 8? Because of course, out of the 24, only 8 won't make it out of the group stage. Do you think they might be in there?
I think they're probably in the bottom 8.
Do you give Romania more chances?
I find Romania really baffling because you look at this side and it's a dreadful side. And Kirikesh is the only sort of player of any real quality there. But they had the best defensive record in qualifying.
Two goals.
But they only scored 7.
Yeah, but you look at their recent friendly results. I mean, they hammered Georgia 5-1 last week. The game before that, they lost 4-3 to Ukraine, but that was mainly because Pyatov was chucking them in.
They won 3-0 yesterday, something like that?
They beat Georgia 5-1, I think, was the last
5-1,
friendly.
Okay.
But then they've had some really odd results. So they drew against DR Congo, but they also drew against Spain. So I think they've got a. I think when they just defend, they're pretty resolute. It's when they try and come out of it, which I think they did against Ukraine, they just got picked off. So I think the Romania game is going to be desperately, desperately dull.
Oh, really?
I think that, yeah, they're just going to pack men behind the ball and look to get. If you remember them at the Euros in 2008, they were desperately, desperately dull.
Mm.
And I think this side is a weaker side and therefore will be even more inclined to play like that.
Okay.
Switzerland are not in fantastic shape.
Let's hear about Switzerland then.
Well,
I understood it to be a good Swiss side. Great manager, no? Pekovic?
Very young side as well. But
they've got worse since Pekovic came in, haven't they? I mean, under his felt, they looked a better side than they do now, I think.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure. I think they are less cohesive a side, but Hitzfeld's sides were a little bit conservative, a little bit dull. I think this team can play with a bit more freedom. And there's a big debate in Switzerland, depending on who you read and who you believe. Either the atmosphere and the team is absolutely amazing, or they're each other's throat because there's this old running feud or division along the lines of who's genuine native Swiss and the so-called secondos, who are children of immigrants. I was reading a bit of the Swiss press this week, and they all say that the results and performances are perhaps a little bit misleading because the atmosphere is actually really good, and they expect this team to do really well.
But the results have been poor, haven't they? They've 4 friendlies this year, lost 3, and then they beat Moldova 2-1. So.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it's hard to say how much of a genuine reflection.
Yeah, of course, friendlies you never quite know, but
there are some genuinely talented players in this side.
But I think if you look at qualifying as well, though, they weren't good in qualifying. Yeah, they were disappointing. No, I mean, they did enough to get second in the group, but I thought their level had dropped from a World Cup.
Yeah, okay. We'll have to see. I mean, there is in terms of individual quality, there's a lot in this team, starting with Xhaka, with Mbolo.
Shaqiri,
there's
Lichtsteiner,
Seferovic, Jamali, Lichtsteiner at the back. There's also Giroud.
Yeah. what about Granit Xhaka?
I think they should easily qualify from this group.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And then...
So France first,
they might end up
second.
In the last 8.
Romania 3rd and Albania 4th.
Well, you can get to the last 8 without playing particularly well. I think that's the fault of the structure.
That's true.
All right.
Hey. And they are quite remarkably... This is actually a stat that I found interesting. They're the 3rd youngest team behind England and Germany, which does suggest that there is some good young talent coming through.
Mm.
So if they did, say, finish runner-up, they'd probably meet Ukraine, well, Ukraine, Poland, or Northern Ireland in the second round? Probably Ukraine, would you say?
Poland, I'd say.
No, okay.
Well, we're against in the Poland, realms probably, of supposition.
They'd be underdogs, but against okay. everybody else, they'd be
let's,
favourites.
Let's get some facts. Let's get some fun facts. Hey, everyone. How about this one? Switzerland granted women the vote in 1890. True or false, Philippe?
False.
When was it?
Much more recent.
1990, 100 years later.
Oh, Swiss, yeah.
Swiss women only got the chance yeah. to vote. Plus, this is you can't use a washing machine after 10 o'clock at night in Switzerland. They literally will. If you mow the lawn on and a Sunday, they will literally call the police.
And police cannot. And police cannot get into an individual's home before 6 o'clock in the morning.
Really?
Yes.
That's
but into a hotel.
Right. Barry, Romanian scientists and engineers are responsible for the CD-ROM fountain pen and the ejector seat. True or false?
False.
CD-ROM. It's very true. It's very true. Without Romania, we wouldn't have ejector any of those things.
I never knew they were named after Romania, the CD-ROMs.
No, no, but it, actually they're not.
I know plenty of CD Romanians.
This is much better than my material. And there was one other team that we haven't done. Have we not done a Switzerland? No, we did a Switzerland. An Albanian one. You know all the fun facts about Albania, don't you, Jonathan?
I've been there, but I don't know.
I know. I've got a very fun fact about Albania.
Okay, go on.
Which I saw when I went to Butrint in the south of the country. And this is back from the Enver Hoxha and era. And I couldn't quite understand. We were on one of those buses with the traditional guide. And I couldn't understand why there were all these giant cactuses growing on the side of the hills. And the guide very seriously said, it is to defend ourselves against paratroopers.
All right. Seriously?
Seriously.
But that's what, I mean, they were utterly paranoid under Hoxha. So they did all these
Could you give us
concrete
Hoxha's
mushrooms.
Title?
No.
Comrade Chairman, Prime Minister, Foreign Minister, Minister of War, Commander-in-Chief of the People's Army.
And deservedly so.
Yeah.
But they have all these concrete bunkers. I mean, just all over the place.
Right.
And they look like mushrooms. So, you know, they're referred to as mushrooms that are bomb shelters. And the bloke who designed them, when he said, yeah, I think this is a design, this is my working model. And so they said, okay, you go and stand in there. We're going to fire these tanks. And he survived. And the problem now is they're so good that you can't rip them out. You can't destroy them. So there's these, all over Albania, there's these concrete shelters.
That's brilliant. But no McDonald's.
No McDonald's.
Yeah.
And I think 1980 to 81, there might have been a year either side, Danny McGrain, the Celtic captain, was the only man in Albania with what?
A moustache.
A beard.
A beard.
Oh, because apart from Hoxha himself, didn't he have one? Or was that the reason?
I think they were just banned, weren't they? And then McGrain
had to get... he couldn't grow one, so no one was allowed to.
I thought the idea was that you could disguise yourself behind a beard.
Oh.
Part of the paranoia.
All right, okay.
Has that ever worked for you?
Yeah. I got into the French Open this weekend.
Disguised as who?
Andy Murray's coach. So it's a joke. If you saw the tournament, you'll appreciate that. Mm. Anyway, wow. Not sure about the tournament then, but our Euro preview is off to a cracking start. And next up, the fun continues with Group B, which features England.
Vous écoutez l'Euro 2016, votre football podcast quotidien. Wouf!
Bit All of right. anti-Welsh bias coming out there, James.
Yeah, a little bit of anti-Welsh
bias.
Well,
it's nice that they're in it.
England or Wales?
England.
Yeah.
Slovakia, they're there as well. A lot of people suddenly sitting up and taking notice of those Slovaks.
Really?
After that 3-1 victory over Germany. Rafa? Oh, come on.
There is Mari Kamšík, but there is not a lot else in this team.
But it was good enough to beat your guys 3-1.
Yeah, but...
Yeah,
I
but what?
A very good piece by one Jonathan Wilson on Slovakia.
All right, then, Jonathan Wilson.
Did you where?
What did you
Didn't
write?
Didn't you write a piece about the 4-6-0 formation at Slovakia?
Well, yes, okay, yeah.
Do you just have the same article,
there's
or do you just kind of cut and paste
There's a Jonathan Wilson farm.
Yes, he does.
Yes, he does.
He puts a new intro and a new ending on, but the middle is generally...
Don't give away the secrets. It's a man's livelihood you're messing with.
All right, so Slovakia, yes or no?
I think they have a very good chance of going through this
Ooh.
Group.
Everyone's got a good chance.
It's the same.
I mean, you're absolutely right. It's Hamšík and a load of hard-working, solid players, but I think they're really well-organised under Jan Kosák. Kosek, I think, is a... I mean, he's, what, 62 now, I think? Very combustible figure. 2009, he chucked an opposing goalkeeping coach through a tactics board, leaving him needing 4 weeks of hospital treatment.
Really? Through a tactics board?
No, he threw the coach through the tactics board.
Yeah, through the tactics
board. Yeah, yeah.
It was made out of concrete.
In Albania.
Right. Wow.
And they're just very, very well organised, very hard to break down. And I think they do have enough quality going forward. I mean, Robert Mack as well, Vladimir Weiss. I mean, not great players, but players who can hurt you if you give them an opportunity. Mm. And yeah, I think their best performance was the first one in qualifying when they beat Spain playing a 4-6-0 with Hamsik as a centre forward.
Right. They've got Skrtel.
That's a problem.
No, he has his Kuzma. I don't know. He's had his moments as well for Milan. He's been one of the better players for Milan. Admittedly, it's a low bar that we're talking about. They had the lowest average possession of any team to reach the finals, Slovakia.
Yeah,
didn't they get off to a flyer on their qualifying campaign before having a bit of a wobble like that? I think they were the winning most team after the World Cup.
Yeah, they won 6 out of 6. They're in England with the only two teams to win the first six, but then they did have a wobble. But their friendly results have been pretty good. I think they're unbeaten this year, which I think not great opposition apart from the Germany game. But
right.
Still, you know.
So, Rafa, coming back to you with this Germany game, why is it you feel that beating Germany 3-1 is no longer a cause for any...
Because anyone can beat this Germany these days. I mean, they've lost against Ireland, they lost against Poland. It's not very reflective
France,
of...
England. Yeah.
Although the French game... unfortunately wasn't a game at all. It's just not really a great benchmark.
All right.
To look at. I mean, Germany were all over the place and very experimental and terrible, frankly. But I didn't look at Slovakia and think, wow, this is a side that could really surprise us. They, as Jonathan said, they were just functional.
Yeah, well, that is what they are. But I think in that group that might be enough because Russia are really
you tip them ahead of Russia, yeah.
Purely because Russia are in such bother with injuries.
Right, okay, Russia.
Interesting.
Mm. Interesting, because they Slutsky coming in has turned
it around.
Well,
I'm a huge fan of Slutsky. Yeah. I think he's a brilliant coach.
Speaking of Jonathan writing the same article all the time,
right.
This is where he tells us the story about Leonid Slutsky falling out of a tree.
I'm really bored of that story. I've moved on from that.
Oh, okay.
Was this the story that ended his playing career when he was trying to rescue a cat?
Yeah, there's a huge piece in the next Blizzard, which is available for pre-order now, is out later in the week. Which it features an interview with Slutsky with his mother, who's been a huge influence on him. His father was a boxer who died when he was very young. And his mother ran the best kindergarten in Volgograd, which is no mean boast. And Slutsky himself is hugely intelligent. In Russia, if you get the highest grade in every subject at high school, you get a gold star. He got a gold star. He then enrolled at the Volgograd Institute of Physical Education, only the second person ever to enrol there with a gold star. His mother was hugely disappointed. She wanted him to be a lawyer or a journalist. And then his playing career came to an end because there was a neighbour, who I think a young female neighbour from what he said, because I sort of when asked why he chased the cat, he went, oh, manly reasons.
Right. Chasing pussies of football.
I was waiting for this. You wouldn't. You would let it pass.
And he fell out of this poplar trying to rescue the cat. And then he was in hospital for a year with leg traction. I mean, really horrible. And he was a second division goalkeeper at the time, age 18. Went into coaching and then had a huge success for the youth team in Volgograd.
Right.
Fell out with the owner, left, tried to buy loads of players from Olympia, the team he'd been coaching. And his car was burnt out overnight. And the suggestion, certainly from Slutsky's mother, although not Slutsky actually, but from his mother, is that it was the owner of the club who'd done it to warn him off.
I'm happy you're bored of the story and didn't get...
Bored of a cat story. I've moved on to the cat. I've moved on to burnt out cars.
Do you know what is the origin of the bear-like rotations and rocking on...
Nerves. Because he looks like a really anxious Tom Hanks, sort of constantly going back and forth. He also has this weird thing where he never wears... in cold weather, he never wears enough clothes. He always looks absolutely frozen. Not going to be a problem in France, I suspect. But anyway, I think he did a brilliant job picking up the pieces after Capello's disastrous start. Won 4 out of 4 to get them qualified. He restructured the midfield in a way that worked really nicely with Shigoyev playing much deeper. He pushed Shirikov forward. And he started playing Denisov again. And Denisov in 2008 looked like one of the best holding midfielders in Europe. He's unfortunately kind of not mentally the most stable player. got in spats everywhere he went. But Slutsky had brought him back, was getting the best out of him. And then yesterday it was confirmed he's going to miss the tournament with a thigh injury. Zhigoyev scored the winning goal for CSKA, which is Slutsky's team, and he's still coaching them, scored the winning goal to win, on the final day of the season to win them the title. And that night it turns out he's broken a bone in his foot, so Zhigoyev's out. And it's Philippe was just saying that this morning Shirokov now is out
Shirokov
as well.
Looks
so
looks like he's out as well.
Oh, wow. All three of the midfield. I mean, Shirokov had signed for CSKA in February and had only played twice, and maybe that's not such a big blow. But still, all three of your midfielders from qualifying gone. I think that's a huge problem for them.
One other thing, I mean, I was looking at the squad. I mean, it's something like, it's basically eight CSKA players in there. So, I mean, we should expect a really together kind of team.
Yeah, I think the other player who's interesting in that side, who may not start against England, but I think he'll come in later on in the tournament, is Fyodor Smolov, who had always been seen as hugely talented, but had only scored like two or three goals in the Russian Premier League, been loaned out to loads of clubs. He moved to Krasnodar and has suddenly scored 26 goals this season. He's top scorer in the Russian League. And so I think they'll try and... with the restructuring of the midfield, he may come in, but I think he'll certainly be a threat off the bench.
His name again, Jonathan?
Fyodor Smolov.
Bingo. Well, you certainly sound like you know your onions vis-a-vis Slovakia and Russia, but let me just test out... with a little bit of true or false. Russia has 11 time zones more than any other country?
No, it has 9.
Russia is bigger than Jupiter?
Jupiter, the planet?
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Okay, but it is bigger than Pluto. Did you know that?
Pluto is the dog or the planet? Or the former planet?
The orbiting, you know, celestial body. It's not orbiting. Well, it is, actually. The celestial planet. yeah, that thing. Apparently it is.
Did you get a gold star at school?
No. there's a restaurant in Moscow staffed entirely by dwarves.
Yeah, I think that probably is true. Yeah.
No.
Really?
But there is one where
one.
All
I'm sure
the waiters...
there will be one.
There's one where the waiters and cooks are all twins. It's called the Twin Stars Diner. Isn't that interesting? And Slovakia, did you know that Martin Skrtel is a qualified tattoo artist?
I didn't know that. Dwarves are a huge thing in Russia. I was just reading that Montefiore book on the Romanovs, which is amazing.
Yeah.
If you thought the Tudors were ridiculous and debauched, the Romanovs are just a million times worse.
Uh-huh.
And I think it was Catherine the First.
The Great.
Is this the Second was the Great, I think.
Okay.
Had sort of... she had fools and dwarves basically staffing her entire court.
Oh, right, yeah.
And there's one of the fools that she had impersonate a chicken for 20-odd years and then decided it'd be hilarious to make him get married to somebody and had this whole chicken wedding that cost, you know, huge amounts of money.
Brilliant.
And the final, the centrepiece at the end... was a floating ice barge on the Neva where everything was made of ice, including the marital bed, and she made them stay there overnight.
And, you know, the joke's on us because we still have royal weddings in this country. but no, going back to that Martin Skrtel thing, it was actually a false. He's not a qualified tattoo artist.
Oh, you know, is it true or false? You said, did you know?
And I
said I didn't know.
No,
tattoo artists don't need qualifications,
but
do they?
Daniel Agger, his former teammate, is.
I didn't realise.
They do in Slovakia, it's more regimented.
Right. Do you know what we haven't talked about? We haven't talked about England and Wales. They're in the same group. So far, you've been a little bit down on Slovakia and Russia's chances. Russia, because of
not Slovakia.
Were we?
I was.
Oh, okay. Rafa was. What about England and Wales then?
I think England will walk this group, personally.
The only team to emerge from qualifying with a perfect record.
Yeah.
Didn't they do that before Brazil as well? Something similar.
Well, they had Italy and Uruguay in the first two games. I think now. Russia and Wales will present less of an obstacle. Also, I think the fact that it is Russia, a very depleted Russia, as we just heard in the first game, will make it easier for England in theory. I think, you know, one win also with a new system might be enough to get through, so that will give Hodgson more room to maybe mix up the team, control these sort of debates about Rooney and all these forwards who's playing. So it's all really laid out on paper for pretty good England Euros.
I think as well Hodgson's learned the lesson from Brazil that I think he allowed himself to be influenced by the negative public and press reaction of the friendlies before Brazil into playing a more attacking style, which turned out to be over-attacking because Gerrard and Henderson did not offer sufficient protection. So Italy and Uruguay, England had more of the ball, arguably looked a better side and just got picked off by cleverer opponents. I think this time he's going to play three at the back of midfield and the defence needs that, and I don't think he's going to be shaken out of that.
Right. You both have Roy on speed dial. and he's been quite adamant today that he's going with with Rooney as starter, which presumably involves what, two alongside him, the Vardy and Kane kind of playing a little bit out wider?
I would assume, two centre-forwards. So I actually thought they played all right against Portugal. I was a bit surprised by the negative reaction.
Did you not think Rooney was sort of getting in the way, playing too far forward, no?
No, not really. I mean, I think the aim of that game was to keep a clean sheet, and obviously that was slightly devalued by Portugal having a man sent off. Yeah, England's problem
and
would
the fact that their player didn't turn up.
So who didn't turn up?
Ronaldo.
Well, yeah. England's problem, weakness had been the defence, and so that was a deliberate attempt to, let's get the defence sorted.
Right, okay.
And you build from that. And then, I think what we saw with Vardy was, it is a problem if he's only had seven touches and six of them are on the left wing and one of them's kicking off. But part of the problem is Portugal sat incredibly deep, which teams just didn't do against Leicester last season, and they sat men in front of that back four, so there was no space for Vardy. So maybe that's an argument to not play Vardy against teams who are going to sit deep, which probably is all the games in the group, certainly Slovakia. And then you use him either off the bench if you have to chase a game, or you use him in the knockouts when teams will come on to England a bit more.
Okay. If you were, Roy, would you be picking Dele Alli ahead of Rooney in that number 10 role?
I mean, I think that's definitely a possibility, but I think from the start, no, you stick with Rooney and Dele Alli players. I mean, I think the midfield three, it's slightly skewed. So Alli still is the furthest forward of the three. Mm. Then you have Dier sitting, and then whoever's on the right is in a sort of shuttling, filling in role, which I think Henderson did really well before he got the injury, and I think that's the sort of problem position as to who plays there.
Right.
What is interesting, I don't know if maybe Raph will say the same thing, but I think that outside of England, people are making far more of the chances of that team than here. I find people rather negative about their chances. In France, they're
You've
really seen as
before.
A genuine outsider. Sorry?
No, they've been hurt before.
Yes,
they're scared to
but
try again.
But people have been watching recent performances, and it's a completely changed team from the one that played in at the World Cup in 2014, where they were very unlucky. In France, for example, England is seen as a genuine outsider for the title. Contender, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right.
No, I mean, I think what's happened here is that after the Germany game, there was a bit of a moment where people thought maybe it's safe to love England again. Yeah. And then 3 days later, they lost again. So I think people are, as James was saying, careful not to get burnt another time.
Right.
But I think this is why the group is so forgiving and is so good for them, because it will, I think, allow them to grow into this tournament. There shouldn't really be any issue of not qualifying from this group.
Should we talk about Wales, Barry?
You can if you want. Yeah.
All right.
Well, they've been very much billed as Gareth Bale plus 10. But I think that's kind of unfair on the 10. They have some very good players. Aaron Ramsey, Joe Ledley,
Joe Allen,
Ashley Williams.
They're
all decent players. They do have some injury. I think their main problem is they don't have a lot of strength and depth. And they're going into the tournament with, I think, Allen, Ledley and Hal Robson-Kahn, who are all carrying injuries, which is a worry, because if they lose any first-choice players, the quality of replacement is pretty substandard.
Robson-Kanu, isn't he the one who scored the grand total of one goal in the qualifiers?
That's not his job. You know, he's a winger by trade. He's playing up front.
Okay.
And his job is to get out of the way and create space for Bale.
It's Bale's job to score the goals.
No one scored more than one goal apart from
Bale. Yeah,
Ramsey scored two.
Oh, did he get 11 goals and he scored seven of them.
Yeah, and assisted another two.
Because I think the way that team's set up is really interesting. That Chris Coleman's often criticised. I mean, it occurred to me even when you talk about Switzerland and the washing machines, not a place he can go and coach because he likes it.
Correct.
But on a late night wash.
It's true.
It's
clearly legal in Spain, though.
But the way he set that team up, I actually looked this up. As a club manager, he'd only ever played a back three in one game, which was the final game of the season when he was at Fulham. I can't remember who he was against. But with Wales, he's gone with the back three. He's obviously decided that's the best way to get the best out of Bale. And I think that structure, just if everybody's fit, and that is the key thing, I think it's a really kind of, it's a clever structure to get the best out of everybody.
But they were hammered by Sweden.
Yeah.
Bale only played, I think, 28 minutes of that game, and there was no Ledley, no Allen, no Kanu.
This is a very poor Swedish side.
3-0.
3-0. I mean, since they qualified, and actually, remember, they qualified, they stumbled over the line more than anything else. They found it extremely difficult to break down any teams that was...
But they beat Belgium.
Yes, but that was... Yeah, they beat Belgium because they... Well, they nicked one goal, basically. Mm. It was Bale, actually, against the Belgians. But I genuinely can't see them going out of this group.
Really?
No.
Wales not getting out of the group, Baron?
I think they will.
Raph? Wales out of the group? True or false?
No, I think Slovakia will get knocked out.
Slovakia, bottom of the group. Really?
You do have a habit in Euros of underestimating teams from the former Czechoslovakia, don't
Me
you?
Me personally?
Yeah. Do you not remember that bet?
Well, there's so many of them. I mean, you're bound to get one right. You overestimate the whole of Eastern Europe constantly.
We've only had one financial bet. And you offered me odds of 5-1 of Czech Republic getting through after they got beaten the first game last time.
Right. That's almost it for this part, sadly. But one thing producer Ben raises a potential problem for Roy Hodgson is the abundance of cheese in France. Over 400 varieties, I believe.
Mm-hmm. That means he's never going to be forced to a situation where there's only Parmesan.
Is it just Parmesan then?
That's the only thing I'm aware of, the only sort of cheese that I'm
Philippe, have you ever
like.
Seen him enjoy a cheese board?
Yes, we did.
Absolutely.
He was refused the Parmesan. And not me refused the Parmesan. This is a point that's important to stress a lot of people got wrong. It wasn't just he turned the Parmesan down. He specifically said, I don't like Parmesan.
Yeah, because we had a big debate. You know, a lot of listeners said, but of course, he was having crab linguine, for goodness sake.
Yeah, I didn't have Parmesan and crab linguine, but no. He made a point of saying he didn't like Parmesan.
But I don't understand that. How can you like cheese and not like Parmesan? It is the cheesiest of cheeses.
Well, I like cheese, but I don't like Stilton, say.
Yeah, but that's fair enough. I mean...
What? Yeah. Scandalous.
Because Stilton's very much its own kind of particular branch.
I thought you were going to talk about Felix Magath when you started.
That's true. Yeah, because he wants cheese to heal a wounded
knee. Eurofacts, I do think that there are now more varieties of British cheese than there are French cheeses.
Really? Is that
so? Yes.
Okay.
I think we undervalue our own cheese. I think British cheese is
magnificent.
Right up there.
Right. Absolutely.
Well, there'll be more of it after this break.
We sort of defer to French cheese, but...
I've just got to get these facts out of the way, the fun ones, remember? Wales.
No,
they've got more castles per square miles than anywhere else, true or false? Wales has more castles per square...
False.
True.
Damn.
They've got four times as many sheep as humans, true or false?
False.
True.
More.
I just imagine if they could pick sheep instead of humans, they would have an exceptionally strong squad.
But they have fewer chickens.
Yeah, but that's probably true because there are more chickens than people in England. I read that, I was startled and a little bit worried. But you all seem to think that's a common statistic.
Yeah, except in Wales where there are more sheep.
So you're saying there's more than... How many people are there in England? 60, 70 million?
No, England, 50. Not the United Kingdom.
No, but is it only about 50?
Yeah, so 60 for the UK as a whole.
Yeah. 50. Oh, right. So 50 for... England. And there's more than 50 million chickens in this
50
country.
50 million and one last I counted.
Right.
But if everyone was picking sheep instead of humans, Jonathan and Michael Cox would be out of a job because there'd be no formations. The sheep would all run around.
The Germans would run the formation.
You just need a really good collie on the touchline.
Yeah. Very good.
And you could whistle like Brendan Rodgers used to do. Actually, Brendan for manager.
Right. Huh? Of course, Germany already had a head start because they've been playing lamb for years. But tish.
Oh dear.
All right, that's enough of that. And we're back with part three, which features Group C. What's this I'm eating, Rafa? Why? It's a Kabuto noodle from our new noodle partners here on Football Daily. Rafa, you're in a hurry. Let's move on from the noodle part of the show to
Strudel.
Yeah. Group C, which features Ukraine, Poland, Northern Ireland and Germany. Who's not getting out of that group, Jonathan?
Northern Ireland.
Okay. Do you concur, Rafa?
Could be Northern Ireland and the Ukraine.
Yeah. They've got Will Grigg. Is no man in all of the world going to feel more pressure this summer than poor Will Grigg? With this chart-topping smash, Will Grigg's on fire.
Deschamps, maybe?
No, I think Will Grigg. Can you imagine?
Conte.
There's no basis for him to go out and set the tournament alight. And yet now I can imagine every stadium's going to be singing Will Grigg's on fire.
Every stadium in France?
Every stadium in France. That thing is going to go all by.
It's going to be like this year's.
It's going to be dun 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 dun.
Okay.
I think
that's
for
a
me,
big shout.
No.
Yeah.
Never.
I will come back to this one. Northern Ireland. They score a lot of set piece goals. What else can you tell me about Northern Ireland?
They top their group. They go into the tournament unbeaten in 12 games.
Ooh.
They're very much reliant on Kyle Lafferty for goals, which for me is a huge source of concern at any time. But
he scores them.
Pardon?
But he scores them for them.
Yeah, he hasn't played much football this season, though. He couldn't get in the Norwich side. Then he went on loan to Birmingham and got injured. Yeah, maybe he's fresh. I mean, you can't fault his efforts for Northern Ireland or his recent efforts.
But if he's not scoring,
anyway.
Will Grigg can score the goals?
Possibly, but I think they will struggle to get out of this group.
Wow,
that's a really tough one.
Yeah. There was a good interview with Kyle Lafferty on the Guardian sort of Euro 2016 Experts Network, and he does seem to have matured a bit in recent times. I think he was a rather feckless individual.
Well, he was an out-of-control womaniser.
Yes, that was Zamperini for that when he was at Palermo. He's an out-of-control womaniser, an Irishman without rules.
Yeah.
I think Lafferty would probably disagree with that because I don't think he considers himself an Irishman.
He was actually pretty good at Palermo. He had a very good goal-scoring record there, yeah. I think.
Well, Zamperini...
One every two games or something like that?
To follow on from that quote, he is someone who disappears for a week and goes on the hunt for women in Milan. He never trains. He is completely off the rails. On the field, he is a great player because he gave us everything he had and more. In terms of his behaviour, however, he is uncontrollable. My coach told me he cannot sort this player out, so he has to go.
Wow.
So go he did to Norwich, where
sounds like a problem for Michael O'Neill.
Well,
there's
Michael,
a lot of beautiful women in France. Philippe.
Well, Michael O'Neill, Lafferty's sort of turned the corner after Northern Ireland were playing Portugal.
Right.
And they were leading 2-1, I think. Lafferty came on.
And then he spotted an attractive woman in the stands and
lost his man at a corner and Portugal scored. Then 12 minutes later, he got sent off and O'Neill basically savaged him in public and sat him down and basically said, look, you have to sort your stuff out. Issued him with a few home truths. He's sort of grown up a bit. Got married last week, I think, for the second time.
Okay.
To a very attractive model from Scotland.
That sounds nice. They're 250-1 outsiders, Northern Ireland. Romantically, I insist that they're going to make it out of this group.
Okay.
But I'm not sure.
They do have form.
I'm not sure whose expense it's going to be.
It would be Ukraine.
They do have form for getting big results against big teams, but notably, you know, they've beaten Spain at Windsor Park, beaten Spain at Spain World Cup.
They haven't had a tournament since Mexico in 1986, though, so lack of big game experience might, count against them. Well, also in that group, then, you've also got looks around Ukraine. What kind of Ukraine side is this? They say it's... Are they saying it's one of the... It's a vintage Ukraine side, Jonathan?
I think it's a pretty good Ukraine side by their recent standards. Yeah, I mean, they've won all four friendlies they've played this year. I think they've got big problems with the goalkeeper, with Pyatov, who I think has always been prone to an error and made a whole series of them in the 4-3 win over Romania. Kamplianka and Yamalenko, two very good wide players playing on the break. They're going to be could be very effective. But there's this... split in the squad between Shakhtar players and Dynamo players, which I think is a concern. I mean, Stepanenko and Yamalenko particularly. That
there was an incident.
There's been a couple of incidents, but it started about a year ago that Yamalenko and Stepanenko swapped shirts after a Dynamo Shakhtar game, and Dynamo won. And as Yamalenko is sort of saluting the Dynamo fans, he just leaves Stepanenko's shirt on the ground and walks away from it. And this was sort of very quickly downplayed. Oh, yeah, just forgot about it. But then it obviously is a bit more than that because the end of the first half of the Ukrainian season, Shakhtar won 3-0. Stepanenko is celebrating, kissing the badge ostentatiously. And suddenly a whole load of Dynamo players set upon him, one of whom is Yamalenko, who gives him an almighty kick. I mean, they said that, oh, yeah, it was just a game, you know, we're fine, but you do wonder. And Kuchar, the centre-back, was also involved in that, so...
Wow, OK. What about Poland, Rafa?
The Poland are really good.
Hmm.
They don't have a lot of star quality when you look through the team. There's not loads of names jumping out of you, apart from, obviously, Robert Lewandowski, who was the leading goal scorer in all of Europe, scoring 13 for Poland qualifiers. I think the secret of them is that the partnership between him and Arkadiusz Milik really works, because they don't have a lot of creativity. There isn't really a strong number 10. There isn't really that amazing width if you discount Piszczek as a right back, who gets on. He's getting on a little bit. He's probably not quite the player he was 3 or 4 years ago. But they're one of those sides which are quite rare at this level, which is in the sense that they work, not just in terms of effort, but actually function. Poland with Nawalka, who, according to Lewandowski, took a bit of time between him and the team to gel, has him playing like a decent sort of Europa League level club side, and that's actually a lot in this competition. And I really quite like them.
There's all another player I really like. It's Krychowiak.
Yeah,
that team.
He's a great player.
Absolutely superb.
But very difficult to pronounce, which why I left
him
out.
Where does he play?
Krychowiak.
He's a Sevilla.
What? No, but where? Sorry, where?
Oh, yeah, holding midfielder.
Okay.
All right.
Excellent.
I mean, it does look like a good, solid team, as you say.
Mm. They are a good, solid team.
Yeah, it is good. Yeah.
And they look at the Northern Ireland game as their final almost, because they beat Northern Ireland. Then they might already be through, depending on the result. We know that we will only know that later, but it sets them up for a game against Germany, which is like a bit of a bonus game. They can play without pressure. A draw will probably get them through, even a defeat keeps them in. And then at the end, they will probably know exactly what they need in a last game against Ukraine. So they're in a good position. Also, the draw works for them. I think we can safely assume they'll make it to the knockout stage.
Yeah, I think Northern Ireland have been pretty unlucky. I think they got a pretty easy qualifying draw, but then I think they got a pretty horrible draw here.
For our bunch of friends, I noticed I was looking at the odds. Poland are 50-1 for the title, so there's definitely one to back and then lay for me. 50-1, it's ridiculous.
Back and then lay.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you would take that bet on and then wait for somebody silly to get excited by early.
No, just simply for them to go through, and then it will drop from 50 to 30 or something like that. Whereas Italy's at 16-1, which is crazy because they're rubbish.
How much?
16-1, Italy. Right. Yeah.
All right, well, we'll be talking more about Italy in our special part two of our Euro preview. That's coming up on Thursday, is it, Ben? On Thursday. Right.
Can I ask a question to Rafa?
Why not?
Since the World Cup win, has there been one satisfactory German performance?
The recent result against Italy was very satisfying, and the performance was also very good. And it was a direct result or effect of the England game a few days before. Germany were absolutely murdered and felt that they needed to show that they can actually also play football a little bit. And that lackadaisical attitude, which has been a problem throughout this campaign, where they would just turn up and thinking, it's Poland, it's Georgia.
Lads, it's Poland.
The combination of having won the World Cup, an easy group, and the new format, which guaranteed that you go through even if you lose three or maybe even four games, made an absolute disaster. Löw used the time to experiment. A lot of players got caps who perhaps shouldn't have been in the side. But that's what I'm saying. Don't read too much into it. Don't look at the Slovakia result. Don't look at the qualifying. This will be a different Germany team.
Is this Löw's last tournament?
No, he signed up till 2018. He's got every inclination to stay on.
All right.
He loves the job. It's a dream job for him. I think it's also, as far as the German FA concerned, he's the right manager. And it's a strange one, because I don't know what the situation was like in France in 2000, but there is pressure because anything but the win is failure. At the same time, the pressure is considerably lower. The consequences of that failure wouldn't be nearly as dramatic, because whereas the World Cup, it was a sense of, if we don't win, then Löw has to go, maybe Bierhoff has to go. There'd be huge question marks about this whole, the character of the team, all these players who've come close many times, but why can't they do it? Now that they have done it, it's now just a case of, you know, do justice to your own potential. And there are some problems in this Germany team. We still have no real international class right back nor left back. The centre backs are a bit dodgy. Mats Hummels will probably not play before the knockout stages. And it is a bit of a clunky side. The the kind of smooth fluidity that you had, certainly in the latter stages of the World Cup, they're not there at the moment. But they could emerge, I think, once the tournament kicks off.
So is anybody asking whether the great revolution in coaching and everything, whether that only produces very good technical midfielders and doesn't actually produce centre-forwards or full-backs or centre-backs?
Yeah, it is a question that's being asked. Certainly when it comes to strikers, it's a big issue. Mario Gomez is back,
yeah,
which makes for a change and maybe makes this Germany team a little bit different. At least it gives them an option to be different, slightly more direct. But yeah, it is a debate, and it's probably even wider than that. It's not so much positions, but at Bayern, there was recently, somebody was giving an interview, I think it was Rummenigge, saying, we basically educate these players too well almost. We're giving too much. They have perfect pitches, perfect conditions all the time. We almost need to take a big step back from that and make them struggle a bit more, which then makes them more adaptable and resistant to problems that always emerge on the pitch. So there is that debate. The thing is, as long as you have Müller, who is de facto Germany's striker,
yeah,
it's not really such a big deal.
He's favourite for the Golden Boot.
Well, he tends to score a lot of goals. Mm. And I'm not sure I would go with a Germany player simply because these teams, while they might not be very good, they're hard to break down. Whereas I think, you know, you come to other groups where there is perhaps a bit more free scoring potential. I'd say, for example, France's group. The standard of, as we said before, the standard of competition is lower this year. So you'd expect more goals and strikers to be more proficient.
I think it's going to be fewer goals.
Why?
Because I think a lot of teams will go into the tournament thinking, we don't want to get humiliated, and if we keep things tight, yeah, we get three draws, we go through.
Mm.
And I think there'll be a lot of quite defensive football.
I don't think anyone's going to play for three draws. Not even
Hodgson. But what we think is, if we don't concede in three games, we will go through. Yeah, Albania are not going to go out and attack anybody. Slovakia are not going to go out and attack anybody. Romania are not going to go out and attack anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Of the 12 teams we've talked about, maybe three will actually try and take the game to the opponent.
Mm-hmm.
It's true, but once they concede, they have to do something. Chances are they'll concede.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, Romania's, for instance, you almost think a 1-0 defeat.
Yeah, you're right. But the counter-argument is that you can afford actually to be a bit more open, because you always have that chance, even with one win in the last game, to do stuff. Whereas before, you had these group, everyone was almost in a group of death, and you knew one defeat kills you.
Mm.
So the last thing you wanted to do is lose. Now, if you lose your first game, you think, "Yeah, we still got Albania, we still got Slovakia, we still got Ukraine."
I mean, I hope it does work out like that, but my fear is a lot of teams, especially in the first game or two in each group, will be thinking, "You know what, a draw's all right. It's 0-0, 20 minutes to go. Shut up shop."
France. No one wants to go home early. No, I mean, I'm saying lovely country, Philippe.
No, absolutely.
Yeah. We will see. So Germany have some issues, right? I think we can.
I was thinking what Raph was saying about, in a way, almost overcoaching players and making them too similar. What is interesting about this France squad, perhaps, which I should have said earlier, is that a number of them haven't been coached traditionally.
Huh?
Yep. A number of them are played lower league football until quite late in their career. Even a player like Olivier Giroud started his career very late. N'Golo Kanté was playing in the 8th division not that long ago. There's quite a few players, which perhaps gives them a little bit of,
street smarts.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm. All right, a little bit of grit.
Yeah,
I'm surprised by that, Philippe. As I was by my fun facts for Germany, Northern Ireland, Poland and Ukraine. Do you know that Germany has 414 registered zoos, Barry, as an animal lover? Did you know that? And that Berlin Zoo is the biggest in the world.
Is this a true or false?
It's a true fact. It's a truth. I've given you the answer. It's true. That's true.
I didn't know that.
Here's a couple of Northern Ireland facts. Or are they? Game of Thrones employs more people in Northern Ireland than the civil service.
So that's true.
That is true.
It's true.
It's technically illegal to go to the cinema in Northern Ireland on a Sunday, and you can be fined £50 for being caught doing it. Is that true or false?
That sounds true. Surely that's true.
I'll say true, but I have no idea why.
It's got to be true. It is true.
No, but, Do we know why? Come on.
Yeah, because it's against the Sunday Observance Act of 1780.
Yeah, okay, but that is wrong. Because if the cinemas are open, it's the cinemas which break the law, so the cinemas are closed, so you can't go to the cinema on a Sunday.
If I leave money out and you take it, I'm not going to be charged for your criminal act. The most popular dog's name in Poland is Burek, which is the Polish word for a brown grey colour. Jonathan, what do you think? True or false?
Burek, that's the name of a dish.
Yeah, Burek is a sort of Turkish influenced Balkan meat pie.
And a dog in Poland?
Yeah, I think it is.
That's true.
Yeah.
Poland has had the most world's strongest man winners. Philippe, what do you think?
I would say yes.
No.
Okay. Well, no.
It did have Mariusz Pudzianowski, who pretty much wins it on his own. But no, America actually has had. The third most visited McDonald's in the world is based in Kiev, Rafa?
True.
Yes. And one more. Jonathan, Ukrainians drink less booze than any nation in the former Soviet bloc.
Jesus, I mean, if that's true, that's shocking, because they drink a lot of booze.
You're right, they do, and it is false. They are actually, statistics suggest, the fifth heaviest drinkers in the world.
Now, who is number one?
Moldova. Followed by Russia, Hungary, and then the Czech Republic.
So that really is a four-meter block stronghold.
Yeah.
So Georgia, Luxembourg. I just said, is the heaviest drinking place I've ever been.
Really?
Yeah.
Give us an example.
Well, you have these... any dinner or any kind of gathering of friends, you appoint a tomato, a toastmaster.
Yeah.
And at certain points through the meal, a toast will be proposed. And the more you agree with it, the more you down from your class. And traditionally, you would drink out of hollowed out horns.
Yes.
So you can't actually put it down, you have to finish it.
Holy moly.
I got in a terrible mess. Marcus Christensen, the
Guardian Football Features Editor.
That's what he is,
The big Swedish friend of the show.
Right. We ended up in Tbilisi in 2001, and we had a massive night. And then the next day, got a phone call from a Georgian friend of ours saying, oh, your flight's at, 3:30? Come round to ours for lunch. And we went round there for lunch, and it was only men at the table. Women were just there to serve the food, which was weird. And they went through this Georgian wine and vodka, and we were in a horrendous mess. And then they gave us each a ceremonial Georgian sword and a drinking bowl and drinking horn.
Right.
And we said, hey, we're not going to get this through the airport. And they went, yeah, just say Mr. Siladza sent you. So we should never get to the airport. They went, so you've got a sword in your bag. I went, yeah, Mr. Siladza sent us. Oh, it's fine. On you go, sir.
Wow.
So have you ever caught with a sword in Tbilisi Airport? Mr. Siladza,
Jonathan, that's an extraordinary story, and there's no way anyone can possibly follow that, so we'll just stop the podcast there. We're back on Thursday with part two, looking at groups D, E, and F. For now, many thanks to Rafa Honigstein.
Thank you.
Barry Glendening.
Cheers.
Philippe Auclair. And Jonathan Wilson. And producer Ben. See you Thursday, unless you're anywhere near the Nelson Mandela Hall in Northern Ireland on Wednesday night, which goes, we'll see you there.